happy that you could take some time out of your schedule to join us today. This is a new program that we started, and I'm excited about because we get a chance to talk to our community through a different medium than I normally have available and share some of the information that is pertinent in financial world of home ownership and insurance and financial education. And I just, as I was saying earlier, I was up there talking and introducing you, and I don't even know if you heard me, but I was saying, hello, welcome to our program for today. I'm Reverend Dr. Charles Butler, and this is Finance and Home Ownership. And my guest for this morning is Mr. Eustace Greaves, and he is the owner of Greaves Financial Services and Bridge Insurance Company. Eustace, how are you, my brother?
Well, again, sir, I am blessed, not stressed, and feeling outstanding. And I know
Amen.
That you feel the same. I feel the same.
I definitely do. I definitely do. So let's jump into it. We're talking about finance and home ownership, and the role that you play is probably one of the most important roles in terms of being on the home buying team, and that is having insurance and adequate insurance coverage. So what are some of the things that you talk about to the clients that you have in terms of preparation for insurance or ownership?
Well, as you know, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to share some time with you in this particular medium. As you know, in the classes that you sponsor, that HCCI sponsors, for home buyers, one of the first things I tell them is that your loan is not even going to be scheduled anymore unless you can prove to the bank that you have secured insurance in sufficient amount and type and paid for it in full for the first premium year.
First year.
That you got to pay the entire first year up front. And I tell them that's one of your two first closing costs, the other one being paying for the bank's appraisal of your property, your future home. So a lot of folks are usually shocked at that because now I'm telling them, look, you have to now set aside money. It could be anywhere from $1,000 to $3,000, depending upon, you know, the type and size, what have you, and composition of the property you're buying. excuse me. That's first and foremost. That's one of the biggest aspects of the entire thing. When we're also looking at the insurance piece, something a lot of people are not aware of is how their credit impacts their insurance premium. You know,
yes.
The bank, you know, it's easier to get a bank. You can have an 850 score, an 850 FICO score, and have a poor score for your insurance. As I like to tell the classes, you have five levels levels when it comes to your insurance credit score. There's excellent, good, fair, poor, and see you later. See you later means that you're ineligible. And again, if you, it's the truth. I mean, I've had those, and I've had a couple of those recently. You see,
wow.
So yeah. So and it's thing and it's simple things that people can really start to work on if they're looking to purchase a property down the road is to, you know, get their if they have revolving credit or if they're using their revolving credit at a utilization rate of more than 19%. That's going to bring their credit score down, their insurance credit score in particular, down. So I tell people if you have a $10,000 revolving credit limit, don't use more than, $1,900 of it. Once you get over that 20% level, it does affect, you know, how much money you're going to pay. One of my favorite stories is I have two young ladies in the same area of Bed-Stuy. Both of whom inherited their brownstones from family, similar brownstones, similar replacement costs, and one is paying $3,000, the other one is paying almost $6,000.
Wow!
And it is simply because of the how one handles their money as opposed to the other. And so it does. Think about it. So if every year you're going to pay $3,000 more for the privilege of owning a home, I think it's time to sit down and say, I need to make some changes.
That's right.
Yes,
Absolutely.
Sir. You need to make some changes. And I'll let you, I'm sorry, sir, because I'll start talking and you know me, I won't stop. Go ahead.
Oh, well, that's fine, brother. That's fine. That's why I wanted you on the show because you have so much information you know, just from the years of experience that you've been doing the insurance and working with homeowners, that I just wanted you to share as much as you could in the time that
okay.
we have. Yeah.
Not a problem. Well, another thing that people have to be aware of now, and this is a big one, and they're not talking about it. You know, there are a lot of insurance commercials on television, and they make me sick because they're not telling folks what they need to know. One of the big things they need to know is, you see, everybody thinks by looking at the TV that every company wants you. No. If you're buying a property, and I teach people what to look for when they're buying a property in terms of that property's physical condition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in New York State, there's a law, and I call it the 60/3 law. In other words, the insurance company has 60 days from the day you turn in your application to reject your application, because they're going to send an inspector out now. They are sending inspectors out like I have never seen in 37 years of business. And if that inspector finds things that those inspectors can find things that you may not notice, but you know what? They'll say, no, you know what? Look at that roof line. That roof is going to collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that wall. You know, that wall is bulging outward or inward. Your foundation is really in bad shape, this, that, the other. And they will simply say this. They'll make a recommendation to the company. I recommend that you reject this application.
Wow.
And
on the basis of the condition of the property.
Definitely.
Not on the credit or anything else for the buyer, just the property itself.
Exactly. If you have the most pristine and beautiful one family home, but if that inspector goes down the driveway and sees that there's no door on the garage, that there you have marsh grass literally growing on top of the garage roof, one of the garage walls looks like it's about to cave in.
Well, guess what?
You have to affect repair of those things, or you know, it's just easier for us to say, you know what, we think, you know, we're going to reject this.
Yeah.
But this is where a good home inspection comes in handy, because I tell folks, don't get wrapped up in the island in the kitchen. Don't get wrapped up in the light coming in through the window. Is there a window? Shake the window. Is it rattling in the frame? That's not good. These are things that inspectors look for. Go up to the roof. If you walk on the roof, if you're able to walk on the roof, and it sounds like snap, crackle, punch, snap, crackle, pop, Rice Krispies, that roof is so dry, it's going to cause a leak as soon as you have your first rainstorm.
These are
things that the companies are looking for. But Reverend Butler, I've got a better one for you. Now, you see, so the 3 of that 60/3 means that if they don't reject your application, they're on the hook with you for 3 years as long as you pay your premium. Well, it's only 3 years. People think when they sign up with a company, it's for life. Not necessarily. And what companies are doing now is they are scheduling re-inspections before your 3-year renewal comes up to decide whether or not they're going to keep you.
So even if you paid your premiums all the time and never had any losses, they're going to come out and still determine that maybe because the condition of your property, we are going to cancel this insurance?
Yeah, I have had a couple of policies canceled because the inspector went out and found out that people had illegally modified a property to go from a one family to a 3-family or a 2-family to a 5.
Mm.
Yeah, so illegal modifications, they are really cutting down on that. And a lot of that knowledge comes out of what? Hurricane Sandy, because you had communities, especially in Brooklyn, where folks have, let's just say, illegal garage apartments. And as the waters rose in that section of Brooklyn, the people had to run out. Because guess what? Either that or they were going to drown right in their illegal apartment. So they don't want to deal with illegal modifications. That's a big thing. That is a really big thing right now. I mean, I can point to one case where a family thought they were buying a 2-family.
Mm-hmm.
I insured it as a 2-family. But when they started having structural problems with the building, and I said, well, call the company, put in a claim, it was rejected because we found out it had been illegally modified from a 1 to a 2.
Wow.
And here's the problem. Those illegal modifications are what caused the structural integrity of the building to be compromised.
Mm.
So the claim was rejected. The family had to go out and get a loan to fix the problem.
Right. Now, did they have to modify it back to a one family?
Eventually, yes. But the first thing they had to do was just fix the building.
I mean, literally fix the building.
That cost a ton of money by itself.
Just the reinforcement so it didn't fall on them. Yeah, because all of a sudden you're living in what could be considered a death trap. The building might hurt some members. Or now there's lawsuits and everything else.
That's it in a nutshell. Another thing to really think about, we talk about climate change, and what it's doing. If anybody's watching the Weather Channel, you have to understand that climate change is real. And, right now we've got how many? I think 25 of the states in the continental United States will be underwater by May.
Wow.
Because we haven't had the spring rains yet. All of that flooding out in the Midwest is a result of just the increased snowpack and ice pack melting ahead of time. And because the ground is frozen, when it rains, we've had tremendous amounts of rain out there. When it rains, it's just going to flow right down into the rivers, which then, of course, wind up flooding everything.
Everything.
So, and don't think we're not in danger here on the East Coast. Because, again, communities on the south and north shores of Long Island and everything going up the Hudson River is in danger of severe flooding. So one of the things I talk to people about is, in addition to your homeowner's insurance or your renter's or co-op or condo coverage, you must consider flood.
Right.
Because flood is not covered. A lot of people think that flooding is covered by their homeowner's policy. It's not. It's not covered.
Yeah.
Exactly. And if you don't, I remember Hurricane Sandy, my average claim for the building was $180,000 and contents was about $100,000. So, the flood risk is real, and that was right here in Brooklyn and Staten Island. So this is real. This is super real.
Yeah.
Now, something else people should think about, and again, stop me if you need to. Something else people should think about when they're thinking about buying a home, or, be it a building or a condo or a co-op, is the availability of insurance based on the distance from the coastline of the property they inspect to buy. Some insurance companies will not write anything that is within 0.5 mile from the coast. In other words, it has to be at least 0.6 mile away from the coast for them to write it.
For them to insure it.
We're talking
just for hazard insurance, not necessarily flood insurance now.
We can touch on that in a second, but that's just for your hazard or your fire insurance. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Now, some companies won't write anything unless it's at least 1.1 miles away from the coast. Yeah. And there are some companies that will write it if the water's in the house. So the question is, when somebody calls me and they say I'd like to get a quote, I want to know the address of the property, because the first thing I want to do is do a risk meter. I want to see how far away from the coast it is to figure out which companies I can submit this to for quote or for binding. So people should not just think that, and this is another thing I would say, Reverend Butler, people should not think that, don't take your insurance quote as just a commodity. You're not buying toilet paper.
Right.
What you're doing is you are basically purchasing control. You're purchasing control in the event of a fire, in the event of a flood, in the event of a burglary. You're buying control over what happens to your life after a covered cause of loss. And you have to look at it like that. We're not deciding between Charmin and Scott Tissue. I talk to classes all the time, and I say, listen, if you own a property and you are driving around, for example, on your automobile with minimum limits, and you hit somebody, then guess what? You'll probably never own a property because you'll be paying them off for the rest of your life because you didn't buy enough insurance to properly protect you. Even people who rent who don't have renter's insurance, I can tell you from experience, people who are renters who didn't have renter's insurance when the fire hit their building and destroyed everything they owned, when the burglars came in and stole everything they owned. Well, guess what? The same money they were using as a down payment, that has to go now to put your life back in order. You see, the Red Cross is only going to put you up for maybe a night or two, and Great Aunt Sally doesn't want you and your – maybe Great Aunt Sally likes you, but she can't stand your little bad children, as she likes to call them. And she doesn't like her refrigerator opening that much.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, to say, well, yeah, I could stay with family, that's only going to last so long. I had a situation back in November, the end of November. A client of mine was she had purchased a co-op apartment in an HDFC building.
Yeah.
And it was a very well-established building, and she is 16 units. And, in fact, her mom lived there. And I hate to tell you, they had a boiler room fire in November, and her line was severely damaged because of the smoke damage. Thank God the building didn't burn down.
Right.
Well, she was the only person because she had just purchased, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, now if you get a co-op or a condo, they will insist on co-op or condo insurance before you can schedule a closing.
Wow.
She was the only one of 16 units that had co-op insurance. So when I spoke to her, after I found out that, you know, I had this claim and I saw who it was, and I said, what the heck is going on? I called her on her cell, and she said, yeah, I'm fine, Mr. Greaves. The company put me up in a hotel in Queens. I said, good. And, you know, they're taking care of everything. I just have to keep a record of my meals. I have to do this, that, the other thing. And, you know, they went in and they took out those things which could be cleaned and recovered, and those that couldn't, you know, they're giving me the money for that. But again, she was the only person in that building who had insurance. And they didn't have heat and hot water in that building for about 3 weeks. And this was at the beginning of December. So she was blessed because she was able to be in a warm place, heat and hot water. I don't even know if they were able to cook, because I believe the fire department shut off the gas to the entire
building.
Yeah, so people couldn't even cook. Unless they used a microwave or a you know, one of those little electric griddles or whatever it's called. Yeah. I mean, you couldn't even cook. So that just shows you the power of having insurance. That's why it's important to have the right insurance at the right time so that you can be in control. She didn't have any worries.
Right.
You know, she had to learn how to take a different train to get to work. Big deal.
Yeah.
Big deal.
But you're right, because, you know, insurance generally in the home buying process is overlooked. They always talk about, make sure you have your real estate attorney and make sure you have your loan officer and your home inspector. But they seldom talk about, and I was glad when you had pointed that out to me, the value and the importance that insurance agent, that insurance company has. Throughout the home buying process, because as you said, you're buying something and it's not insured. Now, you may end up losing money or, you know, time and effort and so forth.
Exactly.
Let's just talk for a minute, and it's all going to tie together. We talked earlier about the value of financial education. And the quote, if you recall, what you had made this quote a while
ago. Right. You and I were talking about turning existing rental properties into HDFCs.
Yes.
And and even without that, you know, a lot of folks who are renters don't have a great deal of savings, because maybe they've got a great rent stabilized rate or a great rent controlled rate,
mm-hmm.
and they don't realize that people around them are paying $2,000 a month, let's say, and they're paying $400, $500, $600, $700, $800.
Yeah.
You came up with a great idea. Hey, look at the prevailing rental cost in your area. Mm-hmm. Subtract your rent from that and make it your goal to save that difference every month.
Every month.
Right. But then as we were speaking, I think we both agree, financial education is so imperative. Because if you don't know how to create an effective and working budget, How do you know where you're even wasting your money?
Yeah.
And that's when I said, you know, what we need to do is show people how to turn their waste into wealth.
I love
Take
that.
Those, you love that, don't you?
That's right.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. And Reverend Butler has the unlimited ability to use it however he wants. Yes.
Yes.
But you think about it. As I tell people in the class when they talk about renter's insurance, I say, listen, whether you know it or not, the average renter's policy costs $1 a day. And they say, wait, $300, what is that? So how much is that a month? I say, guess what? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's $30 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. But if we could show people that by giving up that latte, give up one latte every week, do you need to have a latte? Do you need five lattes a week? Do you need to spend $30, $35? Then you're putting money in the tip jar every week.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it make more sense to bring a mug from home, bring in some instant coffee with some sugar and some milk that you put in the fridge with a note that says, touch this and I will find you? You know, or you work with your work crew and say, let's go in on a Keurig machine.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do this. But again, if you save as much as $6 a week just by not buying one latte, you paid for your renter's insurance for the week. Okay?
Wow.
You think about that. And so if you don't need one, imagine if you give up five lattes a week.
Oh my.
And you say to yourself, well, guess what? I take the difference between what I'm going to spend to supply myself, which is going to be a lot less than $5 for a cup of coffee, and I'm going to put that, boom, in my jar. And when I get enough money in the jar, I'm going to go to the bank and deposit it in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember this movie. I think it was Mr. Church with Eddie Murphy, where he was a chef for this family. And as he went to buy groceries one week, the mother in the family said, take these coupons, because they'll save you money. And
yeah.
It was the first time he had seen coupons. And so what he did was every time he went to shop for food to cook for this family, he would bring coupons.
Uh-huh.
And the young lady's mother died after she graduated high school. She said, well, I got accepted to Boston University, but I guess I can't go now. He presented her with an envelope full of money. He said, this is from the coupons over the years. I guess you can't go to Boston University. Wow.
Yeah.
Just with coupons. So we have to look at, you know, we have wealth, but we're wasting it. So let's turn that waste into wealth. Let's turn those wasted dollars into wealth dollars.
That's just right. Gets
better the more I say it.
And, you know, you're right, because one of the things we do in our class is I have people, and we look at wasteful spending. And when you write everything, all your spending down on paper, put it in a budget, and you can just see how much money you're wasting, how much, and, you know, people are saying, oh, I can't afford this, I can't afford that. But with any kind of financial plan, as you said, let me just cut out one latte, or let me just cut one, you know, whatever out.
Mm-hmm.
Over the course of time, our financial capacity workshop, for example, the average individual, without receiving an increase on their wages, you know,
mm-hmm.
an increase, by cutting wasteful expenses, like you just talked about, we're able to save about $3,500 a year.
Ooh.
With no, just cutting, just, wow. And in some cases more, that's the average. So some people, like, you know, have found out that, hey, I've been spending $150 a week on lottery tickets. You know, that's like
what?
300. Yeah. And these low-income folks, man. You know, it's like $3,600 a year,
mm-mm,
you know,
mm-mm, mm-mm.
The lottery, $600 a month. What's that? $3,600 a year.
I'm telling you that. Let me give you a joke, Reverend Butler. I know you're aware of this.
Yeah.
You know, now there is talk in the mighty halls of the FHA, the Federal Housing Administration, that they are going to become more stringent in the underwriting process. For the home loans they make. So people have to understand that you have to now come to this. Eventually, you're going to have to come into this process with a stronger credit profile and a heck of a lot more resources than you're able to do right now.
That's right.
So you know what? Because they're seeing already problems with foreclosures. Yes,
mm-hmm.
we told the banks, If you want to keep your CRA, level of your CRA participation, you want to do this, you want to do that, we want you to make more loans. Okay. Mm-hmm. The problem is they're making loans and they're doing what they're supposed to do, and then we the FHA backs up those loans, but now the FHA is saying, wait a second, we're having a problem. We're creating our own problem. So folks have to understand, listen, if instead of 3% down, you can come with 5 or 10, or my goodness, amazingly, even 20,
exactly.
Well, guess what? Yeah, guess what? You're going in with a lot more skin in the game. If you have some savings beside in case you need to make emergency repairs on the house and you don't have to finance those repairs,
mm-hmm.
you're much further ahead. I've got a client right now, unfortunately, she had to put in a new boiler and hot water heater a couple of years ago and had to finance it.
Exactly.
So that means every month, not only are you listening as you have to put up heat and hot water, you're thinking that, yeah, every month I've got to service this debt. We don't
mm-hmm.
pay debt. We service it. In a sense, we're slaves to the debt. We must service this debt. So imagine if she had had $10,000 or $12,000 in the bank where she could just say, hey, do the work. Here's a check. Thank you.
Exactly.
Make sure nothing leaks.
Right.
And then what you do is you set out to rebuild your home emergency fund. I also speak about that when I talk to folks. I say, no, there's no insurance policy for that. However,
mm-hmm.
this is your emergency fund.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
And that becomes a budgeted item. That's a budgeted item. Let me set aside $50, $100, whatever I can each month, even if I don't use it, as a home emergency fund, because you might not have an emergency every month, but when you have one, it could be significant in terms of the cost.
You think about the cost of a new roof.
Yeah.
Think about, especially, it's one thing if you have a brownstone and a flat roof, as I like to call it, that's one cost. But if you have a gabled roof that has two or three or four surfaces, forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a $5,000 or a $6,000 fix. Now
that's
you're
right.
talking about $10,000, $15,000.
Yeah.
So this is money you want to have set aside for that purpose. And again, I mean, I've heard such luminaries as Deborah Johnson from Chase Bank.
Yes,
at your seminars, and what she talks about when she talks about credit and this and that and how to use your money to your benefit, it's absolutely amazing. You know, so
if
people come to workshops like yours, they will walk away with a wealth of knowledge.
And that becomes empowering because now you know how to prepare for home ownership. You know how to assemble a team. You know how much money you're going to need. You're putting yourself in a position where you're not going to be taken advantage of. And, you know, unfortunately,
exactly.
a lot of scams and, you know, I see it all the time, people losing a lot of money from just not knowing the process. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That well, becomes, let me ask
Go
oh,
ahead.
Sorry, Reverend Mother. Now, I was going to ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
In your experience, your years of experience, how many people who have gone through a course like yours have had to come back for foreclosure counseling as a percentage?
As a percentage, it's less than, just through the housing counseling altogether, it's less than 1%. We've been blessed because one of the things I teach in my class, we've had zero. I've had people who lost their jobs after closing, 3 months, 6 months, a year after, and was able to maintain their property because of what we teach in class.
You see?
Rule number one in looking at a house or condo call is make sure you comfortably afford. This is rule number one that I stress when they're shopping for a home. Can I comfortably afford it? And by definition of comfortably afford, I mean, even under financial duress, and then we give them a definition for financial duress, you can still make your mortgage payment under financial duress. Financial duress means you ain't got no money. That's financial. You have a mortgage payment. That's financial duress in its purest form. But, and I have one lady, she didn't even tell me, single mom, had been unemployed for 10 months. And
wow.
I said, you didn't even... But didn't even apply for a loan modification because she understood how to manage her money, how to save, to buy something that she could comfortably afford. She told me after she went back to work, you know, I was unemployed for the last 10 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Understand money management because, you know, stuff happens. We also teach in that same vein to start small business and how learning how to create in your own income. Because what happens if, you know, the president or CEO of the company comes in and says, okay, unfortunately, we've just been purchased by such and such, or we're downsizing and I have to lay so many people off. And you're like, but hey, I just closed on 2 months ago. I've been here for 12 years, 15 years. We're sorry. We love you. We're a valuable employee, but, you know, you got to throw, you know, we got to preserve the organization, and that means getting rid of you. And wow. So they have to understand how to create additional income. And this is why our small business workshop has become so popular. And we say start creating income, know how to create income, because no one ever has to hire you again. You know, you can be a veteran, you can be a single mom, you can be a person with special needs. And I was like, hey, that's not my responsibility. You know, and you see companies downsizing. So what's going to take the place? You have to understand as a homeowner how to create your own income, how to become self-sufficient. And so that's
amazing.
Yes, indeed.
That is amazing.
We're about to have our second Small Business Expo that will take place in June. We had our first one last year where we had over 30 businesses that we've helped launch. You know.
Wow.
Come and now, because entrepreneur, and we talked about this again as it relates to that renting versus owning, and you know, empowering people as opposed to enabling them and keeping them handicapped, as you said, to keep people in their place, because low to moderate African American people of color, we have to understand that we now have to be in a position of self determination. And
yes.
So doing that, that becomes key to this whole process. Otherwise, we're going to continue to be at the mercy of those who make the power of decisions, those who are in decision-making power.
That's right. Wow. That's amazing. That is amazing. That's a fantastic thing to have the Small Business Expo and to do that. As you say, who was it who said you're supposed to have at least two or three streams of income? Multiple streams of income. But again, you see, what that means is you can't go home at night and watch 4 or 5 hours of indiscriminate television.
That's right.
You know, you have to be reading that book. You have to be going to that meeting. You have to be working on that side business, because that's your time to do that at night. You know, nine to five, you have to give, you know, you've got to render unto Caesar what is Caesar's.
Yes, sir.
But then the rest of the time, you render unto the Lord, or in this case, your side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, look, better a side hustle than a side chick, I always say. So, you know.
Hey.
I'm terrible.
Let's pull the cars back in. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. And the other piece of that we're now exploring and just starting to scratch the surface on is investment workshops. People, again, in our community, less than 1% have any investments. They may have a 401k through their job, but other than that, they don't know anything about investing. And the same way with small business. You know, here we are, African-American, Latino population in New York City alone consume more than 18 states in the country. Just in New York City. We're consumers. We've been taught to consume, buy. People market and target us. But we have no, we're not buying from ourselves. We own less than 2% of the businesses. You know, and the same way with investments, less than 1% have any investments. So these are areas that we're now looking at. Home ownership definitely is the start to that whole investment and equitable development process. But in addition to that, now small businesses become important, and investing also becomes, because now you want to start putting your money to work for you. You know, so we're going from turn your waste into wealth and then put your wealth to work.
Ooh. I tell you, you know what they say. You know, I always tell folks, I love good conversation, because from good conversation comes great ideas. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
It's a three-step process. Identify the waste, change the waste to wealth, and then put the wealth to work.
Mr. Reverend Butler. Well, I guess now we have to share the patent.
We have to.
We have to share the
copy. That becomes key to that whole process. Then what we're looking at, and Lord willing, you'll start seeing a transition in the community, because now you will have that wealth, that equitable wealth that we so badly need and desire, and no longer being again at the mercy of everyone else. A self-sufficient community. And that's all ultimately what our goal is through home ownership, small business development, investment, and insurance plays such a large role in that entire process.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I mean, you know, as I tell people, I say, listen, it's called life insurance because you're dead, but somebody is still here.
Right.
Last year when I had my own little bit of when I had my own little situation, I was able to look at my daughter and say, listen, you know where this is? Yes. You know where the insurance policy is? She said, yes. Then she looked at me and she said, you have paid the premium, haven't you? I said, yes. And I knew if nothing else, she would be in a good position financially. And she's got a very good head on her shoulder because she's watched me over the years. And I've even taught her how to do budgeting and financial management over the years. So I wasn't worried about that.
Right.
You know, I really wasn't worried about that. And, you know, it's an amazing thing. I think it's an amazing thing for any, and I'm going to say any man, first off, to say, listen, if I walk out of here tomorrow, if I walk out the door tonight and I don't come back because, you know, I've gone to my reward, my family's going to be able to keep moving and probably even do better than if I was here, but they're going to keep moving forward.
Exactly.
They don't lose because I'm gone. They don't lose because I'm disabled. They don't lose because the house caught fire and we don't have enough money to rebuild it. You know, they don't lose because somebody came in and literally cleaned us out and now we don't even have, you know, dainties to wear. So we've got to go out and get everything again. So, that's the beauty of insurance. And if you look at the financial pyramid, at the base of the financial pyramid, it's savings and insurance. That gives you the control. As long as you have those bricks in place, you can do the investing. You can do the property purchases. But let's make sure that the family unit continues. Let's make sure that we as a unit continue as long as we have control through the proper insurance. You know, so
exactly.
I mean, I think about this sometime, and my daughter hears me talking to myself, and I think sometimes she says, Lord, the man has gone off the deep end. But it just gets me so darned excited when I think about it. You know, if I could just give you one.
Go ahead.
I want to give you one little story because I try to teach people what insurance really is. I hold up a dollar bill. I said, what am I bid for this dollar bill? And people will say 80 cents, 90 cents, this, that, the other. Well, I had a client in Queens a couple of years ago. They had a fire. And they had $396,000 of insurance on the house at that time. And their premium was about $1,300 for the year. So I told them, somebody divide $396,000 into $1,300. And it came to a little bit over 3 cents. I said, so good. If you had told me you would give me 3 cents for a dollar, guess what? That's what insurance is. It's a few drops of ink on a piece of paper, pennies on the dollar, and you're buying dollars for pennies.
Exactly.
Think about it. You don't have to go out and make $2 to make a dollar.
Right. And the thing that I think a lot of people have a challenge and an issue with insurance is like, yeah, but what if we don't have a loss? Well, then God bless you. We're blessed.
Let me tell you. That's a wonderful thing.
I've been paying for 10 years and I never had a loss. Well, you know, you were fortunate. But
Thank you. One loss,
is, you know, could eliminate all those other 10 years of not, you know.
Let me tell you something. I hate losses, because losses means my favorite four words to say to a family after an insured tragedy is, don't worry, you're covered. However,
right.
There is still a period of time where the kids don't have clothes, where all their school books have burned up. Your financial records, unless you're keeping them in a waterproof, fireproof safety chest, they're gone. You know, maybe you didn't grab your wallet when you ran out the door. Anything is a period of literally personal reconstruction that has to go on as you're reconstructing the physical aspects of your life in terms of your property. And I have to tell you that, you know, but it's a heck of a lot easier knowing that you've got the money to do that.
Exactly.
You know, and if you've got the money to do that, and if there's one more thing I can say about the insurance process, especially as applies to houses, Reverend Butler, you're going to have to get what's called the replacement cost on your house. You should always get the replacement cost, not the mortgage amount, not the sales amount, the replacement cost. What is it going to cost me, brick for brick, nail for nail, board for board?
That's right.
100%. Okay. And I would tell everybody, as I mentioned in the classes I teach, listen, you have the right to demand from any person who's going to give you a quote that you get a hard copy of the replacement cost estimator because you want to know how they came to that number. Because guess what? That's the number you're going to have to depend on. If 5 weeks after you bought that house, the house burns down, that's the number you must depend on. And I'll tell you, I've started working with some clients where they needed $400,000, and their very popular company on TV, they only had $257,000. I said, you're shy. You know, you don't have enough money to rebuild your home. So what are you going to do if it burns down? Well, they said that we have guaranteed replacement. I said the only time you get guaranteed replacement is if you have 100% of your replacement cost, and then you add that as an additional rider. You don't have guaranteed replacement with 50% of the coverage that you need. No. It's amazing. So folks should really – and that's another good reason for going to – and I'm not trying to, you know, to blow smoke. I'm not trying to blow cigar smoke in anybody's face and tell them it's Chanel number 5.
Mm-hmm.
You must put yourself in a position to get knowledge. And again, like you say, with the HCCI, you know, I'm on the phone with you, so with the HCCI classes, you're going to get the knowledge you need to be a successful homeowner.
Yes.
So you know what? Give up that Saturday and say, let me go and sit in here and actually learn something. And I've got to tell you, I've never addressed one of your classes. I don't know what it is, but I've never addressed one of your classes where I didn't feel as though everybody in that room was fully engaged, and you know they bought in and they're buying into what you're saying. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing, you know. And I especially love it when you put them in charge of deciding who's going to get a mortgage and who won't. They're some cold-hearted people. Man, I sat at a table one time in one class, and I'm looking at these folks. I said, wait a second, you're some cold people. They said, no, this is what Reverend Butler said, so they get nothing.
That exercise is so good because I tell them, I said, these are real cases. These are real people who were here, and would you give them more? And I set it up so there may be one or two people in that whole group that will be approved. And they go back and forth and they argue, but it helps them to crystallize and understand, so now I can put myself in there because the next week what we do, they are the case study on what they can afford.
And there you go. There you go.
Case study. Then we make each of them the case study, and they're like, "Oh man, I can't afford anything. I'm not ready." So it helps them to understand how much money they need. It helps them to understand how much they can afford. How much savings? It helps them to become serious about that process, and you can see group. And there, my group generally is hungry and thirsting for knowledge. They want to know the steps. They want to know, you know, and I have them set a goal. How soon are you going to be ready? You know, give me a target date, you know, June 2019, June 2020, you know, like June 2019. That's only a few months away now. You know,
you think about that.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Know, 2020 is only, you know, like 9 months from now.
That's true.
That is true.
It is. So some people, I think they discover they may be 3 or 4 years away unless they do some massive reconstruction of their finances.
Yeah. Now with the cost of property being what it is and incomes not being there and the banks not lending as much, a lot of people who thought, and again, without knowing, I'll be ready to buy in June. But then when we do the numbers and sit down, they say, I'm not going to be ready in June. maybe June 2021, you know, because they see that. One of the programs we're starting, and this is what I was going to speak to you when you were talking about your daughter before.
Mm-hmm.
For years, I've been trying to get into the school, start doing financial education with our young people. And starting in April, we're going to be going to some of the schools and talking about insurance. So if you're available, I might invite you to come over too. Talk about insurance, credit cards, using credit cards responsibly, and money management. You know, so these are guys, you know, I was thinking when I started this and started seeing the credit and the credit history of my potential buyers, you know, and they were into bankruptcies, they had a lot of collections and judgments, and I was like, I said, I need to find third graders. Once you're beyond third grade, if you don't have financial literacy, financial education, you're already ruined. man.
I agree with you. I agree with you on that. You know, because that is the truth.
They're thinking, you know, Air Jordans or LeBron sneakers and all this other designer stuff. And like I was saying, you know, we consume more. Their parents are getting them shopping and they want to keep up with their friends who wear $150, $200 sneakers. And these are little kids. And it's like, you know, we want to get them to understand the value, as you said, that value of that dollar that you hold up, you know, and to start to utilize it. Not in terms of just consumerism, but in terms of investments, in terms of saving, in terms of wealth building. And so we're finally starting a class with one of the schools. It's a high school. So hopefully from there I'll be able to maybe by the fall get to the junior high school and maybe by the next spring be in the primary school. Because that's where I think, you know, because a lot of people, this is interesting, will tell me, no one ever taught me. No one ever taught me. Nobody in my family ever taught me about investments. Nobody taught me about saving. No one taught me about home ownership, the value of it. You know,
That's true.
So, you know, we have to, again, start to have those dining room discussions and youth group discussions or wherever we can find individuals to have that as a discussion so they understand the power of creating money and creating wealth for themselves, for their families, for the community. You know, we often talk about that whole thing with redlining and what was going on in Harlem and many communities throughout the country where, where banks and the government just determined inner city urban areas not to create mortgages or provide mortgage opportunities. And so in doing that, denying that community, which primarily people of color again, from having the opportunity to establish wealth and create wealth. And I look at how, you know, when the homes in Harlem were going for nothing when the Mayor Dinkins and the other were trying to sell property, you know, for $1, $100. And I say, why didn't the community come together and purchase that? You know,
That's a good question.
You know, the community leaders wasn't pushing it. Some people had the vision and they bought, but they couldn't get other people to buy in because of lack of trust again among each other. She's going to take the money and run away and so forth. And so we did not buy at a time we should have been buying. And that put
us
at a tremendous disadvantage today. It's not something that is not insurmountable, but it's just going to make the work so much harder now because of the lack of vision. And I think of that scripture, my people perish for lack of knowledge.
That is so true.
Yeah.
That is so. It's not lack of effort. It's not lack of anything else except, as you say, if you don't know what's available, if you're not keeping your nose, if you're not keeping your ear to the ground.
Yeah.
If people who do know aren't willing to share openly and freely, then guess what? Like you say, we won't know, and things just go right past us.
Right past us. Everybody else is taking full advantage of it, and have you know, lined their pockets and created financial wealth and independence, and here we're still struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I love that. It's like, why? It's not necessary, but we didn't know. So, these are the things we're looking at doing and the things we're looking at creating. We have a few minutes left, it looks like, maybe 10. I don't know.
Okay.
So if you have any final one thing I wanted to talk to you about, the trends in home ownership. Do you see any, what do you see going on now in this whole arena of home ownership? We talk about prices going up and it's taking longer for people to buy, but do you see any particular trends happening there?
I would say that the trend I'm seeing is that one trend I'm seeing is that you know, you're getting folks buying property. And I worry because I wonder if, again, they have that backup source of income or those savings to handle emergencies in the home. You know, pipes do break, roofs fail, windows break, the boiler goes. Are you coming in? You know, a lot of folks are coming in by the skin of their teeth, and then they lose their teeth because life punches them in the mouth.
Right.
You know, so I would love to see, because again, if I go back 20 years, 30 years, folks came into the home buying process and into home ownership with money in the bank.
That's right.
You know, they came in not just with their down payment and this and that, but they actually had real money in the bank. They had resources they could tap in case of a 6-month layoff, in case of a year layoff. Because, you know, you remember what happened beginning in 2007, right around through 2010, when, you know, forget about making home loans. It was more about, you know, setting up a foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Because folks were losing their homes right and left because, again, many of them had not gone through the education process. And to that note, let me say this also, Reverend Butler, because one thing that really bothers me about the home buying process is that, and I teach classes, Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, occasionally the Bronx.
Right.
It's the amount of interest people show during the classes. Some people are just there to get a certificate so they can get a grant.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are asleep in the class and don't even realize that, no, you don't get the grant until you close.
That's true.
Okay, so when you will get these grants once you close. You've got to put yourself in a position to make it to that closing table. But here's my question. Are people overly dependent on grants as opposed to being more fully dependent on their own resources? The grants are good. Grants are wonderful. But when you go, if there were no grants, could you afford that house?
Could you afford it? Yeah. Well, I talked to them about the grant because, that's part of the motivation for them to come in. You know, we're lobbying to try to get them to raise the area median income from 80% to at least 100, if not 120. But I tell them I won't give them their certificate until they pass the final exam. And they'll say, oh, we didn't know there was an exam. I said, yeah, there's an exam. You know, because you're right. If I gave them the certificate upon the complaint, they're in there sleeping. They're coming from work. I know they're tired, but they're trying to stay focused. They're there for all times, different types of reasons. So they'll say, what's the final exam? And I'll say, go out and buy something. When you have purchased, that shows me that you have understood the process and successfully negotiated around the steps involved, from just the workshop to getting pre-approved, to becoming mortgage ready, getting pre-approved, assembling your team, knowing what you're going to buy, making an offer, you know, negotiating the price and making an offer, signing the mortgage, applying for the mortgage, signing the mortgage, and closing. You know, if you haven't done that, and that's again where the case study that we were speaking of earlier, that helps them to understand, oh, you got to go through all these steps, and man, that's a lot of stuff, and it's not as easy as one might assume. Then this time,
I'm sorry.
No, I said, and then it's time to complete the process. So having that money ready and having all the things you need in place becomes key to the process. But we're just about out of time, so I'm actually grateful for you coming today and being taking the time out.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you. A wealth of information, knowledge, and I just want to give a quick plug again. Mr. Eustace Greaves from the Greaves Financial Services and Bridge Insurance Company done a wonderful job in helping families and individuals continue to grow and prepare for home ownership and protecting their investments. Again, this is Reverend Dr. Charles Butler, Vice President of Equitable Development with Harlem Congregations for Community Improvement, and you have been listening to HDCI's Financial Wealth Building Talk Show. Again, we appreciate it. Look forward to our next series. Eustace, thank you again, my brother, for taking the time out and being.
Thank you for inviting me. It was a blast. I enjoyed it.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. God bless.
All right, sir. God bless.
Bye.
Oh, the future is bright. Yes, it is.
All of our dreams can come true.